Name this evening. Enjoyed that children's lesson. I left my house a little early tonight because I was afraid I was going to have to wait on traffic and wait on buggies. Lancaster County, to me, is known to test my patience. But before you get too anxious about that, 78 and 81 also test my patience, even though they're interstates. I don't know what is worse, to be on a road that's a 45 mile per hour speed limit and you're doing 35, 40 behind some slow traffic, or to be on an interstate that's 65 and you're sitting still for 2 hours. I think I do know which one is worse. Tonight, the topic is gentle versus biblical parenting. Gentle parenting. I was not at the planning committee when these winter Bible school things were planned. And I got this assignment and I saw this title, and I'm okay preaching about parenting things. And I looked at the title a second time and I thought, I don't understand. I was a little confused. I left it go a little bit. And then finally I reached out to one on the planning committee, and because I never heard of gentle parenting. I thought we were gentle parents as we raised our children biblically. And I didn't realize that gentle parenting is a thing. It's a doctrine. It is a teaching. It is a pattern. It's something that books are written about. And suddenly, you know, I guess I don't listen to those podcasts and buy those books. And it's not because my children are in their teen years and we're not raising little ones anymore. Because after I realized some of this and I Googled it, and then I purchased 2 books about gentle parenting because I wanted to read some things. And well, gentle parenting versus biblical parenting. I had my eyes open to a subject. I had seen gentle parenting and heard about it in parents who were doing this. I just didn't know that's what it was called, and it was this thing. There's 2 disclaimers I'd like to make at the beginning here, and that is, first of all, there's a lot of variation in what is termed gentle parenting as I understand it. There's different writers that write about it, and there's some variation in exactly how they approach it. So there's some variation as I try to describe it. I want to be fair with it because there is variation. But secondly, I'd like to say that not all the concepts taught in gentle parenting are wrong or unbiblical. And that might shock you, but they're not all wrong. However, there's some foundational things about this that are wrong foundations, and it will lead us wrong. The title suggests that it is either or, and it's not quite that simple. Because there are some things, as I, you know, read, and there are some things, and I'll point some of those out perhaps as some point in the message, but often subjects are not that easy that this is all over there and that's all over here. So gentle parenting, these writers that promote this, You'll often see taglines or the one of the statements made about why you should buy this book. You'll see these taglines like, you want to stop being angry with your children, learn gentle parenting. Or you want to stop yelling at your children. Well, I don't believe that biblical child training involves being angry with your children or yelling at your children. And so they kind of set this up that biblical correctional child training involves frustrated parents that are angry, and gentle parenting is something much better. Gentle parenting, and an effort to try to describe it or to unpack it for you, is relationship focused. It guides children with empathy, respect, and understanding. And that's not wrong in itself right there. That is important in a biblical correctional setting, to have empathy, respect, and understanding of children. But their focus is relational, It emphasizes connection over correction or punishment. You need a connection to your child. And you do need a connection to your child. They talk about collaborative problem solving. So you and your child solve problems together. Instead of you telling your child this you will do, you talk with your child and help them to process what would be the best thing to do right now and avoid this thing of a parent dictating it, but collaboratively working, talking with the child so they understand what really should be done now at this moment with this situation you're facing. Gentle parenting promotes avoiding all shame and punishment for children. You don't relate to them as they do things, as they react, as they're bad or whatever. You do not relate to them in a way that they feel ashamed of what they did. So it avoids shame and punishment and instead replaces it with reinforcement of good behavior. So over on this side, when they do wrong, you have to acknowledge that, but you find the times when they did good and you bless them for that because you don't want them to feel shame and the reality that they did wrong. It teaches parents to be more like a coach to our children than a lawgiver or a punisher when they have done wrong. This gentle parenting teaches that corporal punishment is abusive to a child's emotions and teaches them violence. As I was studying for this, I got a message from somebody, that a friend of mine in Canada, and he was asking some advice. His friend up there somewhere, he has a friend that's in a church setting where the church setting has really slipped and become liberal, and the father in this home is holding to some standards about cell phone use for his adolescents. And some of those things. And somewhere in that church setting is this teaching afloat. And his children caught on to this, that dad is abusive if he holds a line. And he has some leaders in the church that sympathize with those children, that like your dad is abusing you and is ruining you by holding a line. And the question was, so what should a family do? Well, I'm sorry, I don't know how to raise a family in a setting like that. There's going to need to be a change. And it might be a little late to make the change because that seed is already sown in adolescent's head. And that's going to be a hard pull. Well, there's two faulty premises, perhaps more, that this whole teaching is built on. And one is the premise that children don't want to be bad. They are not capable of doing our expectations till they mature more emotionally. They really don't want to be bad. They're just not developed. And that's why they do what they do. And they'll talk about the frontal lobe of the brain develops around 12 years old. That's the part that does problem solving and sorting. But the prefrontal cortex only develops fully in the early 20s, maybe 23 or 24. And that's the part that takes care of our judgment and our impulse control and emotions. Perhaps that would be a reason why we shouldn't have smartphones in our hands until we're past 25, till our prefrontal cortex is developed to control ourselves. And that's just a side note. So, but the idea is that your children don't want to be bad. You need to work with them until they're developed. And so you talk with them because they didn't really want to be bad. Their brain is developing and their issues of life are only because their brain's not developed, not because they're sons of Adam or daughters of Eve. So that's the one faulty premise. The other faulty premise is that punishment equals social distancing and broken relations. And they talk about this, that when you punish your child, it pushes them from you. It breaks a relationship. They don't want to talk to you if you're punished. But I believe that loving biblical correction makes a bond and makes a connection. And we'll see that a little later. It's the assumption that biblical correctional parenting always involves frustration, raising your voice, stirred emotion, and abused children. And that's not true. That's some of the premises that gentle parenting is built on. Now, years ago, I worked at Dynatech Generators, and there was a man worked there, a Christian man, but not a Mennonite. A young married man, he had two children, and expecting their third. And we sometimes would talk about family life, and our children were little, and we were raising a family too. And one day he told me a shocking thing. He said, my wife and I, we have found this certain book, and I forget who the writer was. But there was a writer that laid out a plan for raising children. And he said, my wife and I are following that book to the T. We're raising our children by that book, because then if our children don't turn out, it's not our fault. I never looked at child training that way. I felt some responsibility to do what I could do and learn. See, one of the scary things about young families is you can't get experience and then raise your family. Well, you maybe can if you teach school or work with children in that way. And so that's kind of a head start to kind of learn some of the principles. But there's a lot about young children that, and we only get one shot at it as we raise our children. And so we have to be seeking the face of God. We have to be listening to preaching and teaching from the Word, following the patterns of God, and also willing to adjust as we learn and as we see things and growing together. It's a wonderful thing to be in a church with other young families that you can talk about what's happening, because not all children are cut along the same pattern. And about the time you think you have it figured out, then God sends you one that's way out of the box. And that's some of the most beautiful blessings God gives to us. As you work through it, we learn something about God. And so, let's talk. Well, first, let me give you an example of gentle parenting. Suppose 7-year-old Johnny was asked by his mother to take the garbage out, and he melts down in a temper tantrum, fussing and whining about always having this job, etc. As a gentle parent, you should talk to Johnny. You should tell him it's okay for him to not like this chore. Actually, you should identify with him that, you know, Johnny, I don't like to take the garbage out either. I understand why you're upset. It's okay to be upset. Maybe you should ask him to explain what parts of this frustrate him, or is there fear involved in this? But help him then to understand that if no one takes the garbage out, it'll pile up under the sink and the kitchen will smell bad. And so you work to the point where Johnny says, of course, I want a clean house, and so I'll take the garbage out. Now, that's their proposal. You must understand that this child doesn't want to be misbehave, but he's probably emotionally not able to do better than that. He don't want to be upset about taking the garbage out. His mind's not developed. You should not make this child feel ashamed of this response, and you certainly shouldn't punish the child. Now, I believe that biblical parenting will stop Johnny in this temper tantrum, will stop Johnny and say, stop, Johnny, you can't do this. And perhaps Johnny stops immediately and listens. Sometimes I'll do that. And so then your direction probably is maybe a little light, and Johnny takes the garbage out. But imagine that Johnny, stop, you can't act this way. And Johnny throws himself on the floor and screams louder. At some point, you're going to take a hold of Johnny. You're going to take him back to a private room. You're going to sit down and you're going to say, Johnny, the issue is not about taking garbage out. The issue is a temper tantrum. You can't do this. When I tell you to take the garbage out, you can't act like this. This is an issue. And probably he needs a spanking. And then you need to pick him up on your lap and you need to tell him that, look, Johnny, I love you and I care about you. I'm not going to let you grow up to be this kind of boy. So let's go. Are you ready to go take care of the garbage? And Johnny says, but I'm so scared of the dark. And you say, well, you know what? I'll go with you, but you're going to take the garbage out. You see, there's loving understanding, but there's a line that says, Johnny, you can't throw this temper tantrum. And there's this also this understanding that, okay, it is dark. And maybe you realize it. I didn't realize actually how dark it is out there behind the house, okay? We have, and that's why I say not everything that's in gentle parenting is wrong. But coupled together with correction, biblical, loving, correctional discipline. So what I like to think about next as I think about this is this question, who is God and what is he like? Because I've heard it said that children learn to know God through relating to their father. And for you mothers, that statement goes on to say, children learn to relate to the church the way they relate to their mother. I'm still pondering that one, but I think there's some truth to that. How the church, how a mother relates to authority and filling her place helps a child somehow to know how church fits under the authority of God. And it's an authority on earth under the authority of heaven. There's probably some, like most illustrations, like most things like that, there's probably some shortcomings to that. But who is God? And as I train my children, how can I best represent God to them? There's three words that I'd like us to think about. God is so much more than this. But there's three words that I like to think about that God is, that we as parents should be in child training, and it will help us. The first one is benevolent. God is a benevolent God who has given us way more than we deserve. Think about the Garden of Eden. The benevolent God made us such a beautiful garden, we all would wish to live a week in the Garden of Eden. A benevolent God created man to fellowship with, put him in the garden, gave him everything. But that benevolent God was also, number two, a lawgiver. And he said, you can eat of everything. All of this you can eat to your heart's delight. There's no limit to the apples and the peaches and all that. But this one tree you can't have. So he's a benevolent God. He's a lawgiver. And then there was failure. And he was a just God. I have wondered, well, just think about the story of the flood. A benevolent God who's a lawgiver, and there was iniquity and evil, and finally the just God came down and said, we can't have this, and he destroyed the earth. Think about the Tower of Babel. In fact, I wonder if a gentle parenting believer, one of those writers of those books, could rewrite the story of the Tower of Babel the way God should have done it, in a gentle parenting way. It would probably go something like this. God comes down from heaven to check this out, and he says, oh, my wonderful men that I've created, I see you have lots of energy. You have wonderful creativity. And your cooperation is great, but look, we must direct this energy somewhere else. And let me help you build something that is honorable. And I know you don't want to be bad. You see where this is going? God came down and he made Spanish and German and French. And the people couldn't get along. They felt bad. They felt frustrated. And you know what? I still feel bad today when I can't speak to my Spanish brothers. I still feel the curse of the Tower of Babel. I still feel the curse from the garden. I still feel bad that we're the sons of Adam. God did not draw back from bringing punishment that made his created beings have a sense of feeling like I did wrong and I'm ashamed. But he gave them an answer for it. And you can be redeemed and brought back in a relationship. Just like a child can be redeemed after a correction and come back into a relationship with his parents. Go out of that room from having a spanking, loving his parents more. And so I say these three words, benevolent, lawgiver, and just. And I know that God is much more than that. And I know that training children, there's more pieces to that. But I just like us to think about those three things as opposed to what gentle parenting would teach us. This, I believe, is biblically representing God to our children. I believe tonight that the ultimate gentle parenting push is contrary to God. The ultimate, and it's when it's complete, the whole package. But as I said, you know, you read some of the statements and you say, you know what? We need to think about that in biblical parenting. Gentle parenting likes to say that biblical correctional parenting is frustrated parenting. And at the end of frustrated parenting is frustrated and angry children. And it's true, at the end of frustrated parenting is frustrated and angry children. But it's my observation that the end of gentle parenting is the same issue, frustrated children. It's the same, very similar, leads to the same end. Versus loving, biblical, correctional parenting that releases children from their iniquity, and as we work through those things, helps to train them and set their feet toward God. Doesn't save them, but set their feet toward God, that when that day comes, they can turn and relate to their Heavenly Father much like they related to us as a parent. So, biblical child training. I'd like to recite two very common passages, you helping me recite Ephesians 6, 1 through 4. We know those verses very well about child training. Ephesians 6, 1, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor thy father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise, that it may be well with thee, and thou mayest live long on the earth. And ye fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Colossians 3:20 is much the same. 20 and 21. Children, obey your parents in all things, for this is well-pleasing unto the Lord. Fathers, provoke not your children to anger, lest they be discouraged. Did you struggle reciting those verses? That is biblical correctional training. So I have a few points that I'd like to share in relation to biblical child training. Remembering these three words, as parents, we ought to seek to be benevolent, lawgiver, and just. When I say lawgiver, it's the idea of heeding the laws of God that are already established and helping our children to understand them. Not necessarily making a bunch of rules for them that they got to keep all kinds of strange rules, but the laws of God. Number one, children are born with a sinful nature. Children are born sons and daughters of Adam. All children are born that way. The preacher's children here are born sons and daughters of Adam. That's why they do bad things. You shouldn't be shocked in school if, you know, parents that you think, my, why would their children do that? You know why they do it? Because they're sons and daughters of Adam, and they need help with that. Proverbs has much direction for us on this. Proverbs 22:15, foolishness is bound in the heart of a child, but the rod of correction shall drive it far from him. So children are born with a sinful nature. Romans tells us that because of the sin of Adam, then this Adamic nature passed upon all of us. By one man, sin entered the world. And it's handed down through. It's simply not true that children are basically good. When children fight and cheat and get angry, it is a bone of the Adamic nature coming out, and it needs to be corrected. It's not true that it is just undeveloped mental capacity. It's the Adamic nature. When a child expresses his carnality, it must be challenged and corrected to help the child to deliver him from destruction. Number two, a truly loving parent will discipline his child. Proverbs 13:24, he that spareth his rod hateth his son, but he that loveth him chasteneth him betimes. If you spare the rod, if you do not correct, you choose to go the soft route, it actually equals not loving them. That stands in contrast to what gentle parenting says. Proverbs 19:18 says, chasten thy son while there is hope, and let not thy soul spare for his crying. That tells us that correction early is important while there's hope. There's a day coming that hope passes. There's a day coming that the path cannot be directed as easily. And it also says that there's a possibility that being a parent, we will be soft on our children, we'll spare for their crying because we don't want to hurt them. We must look at this with an eternal perspective that to help my child to have his feet turned toward God and correct his wrong nature, I will need to correct and he will cry. And it's all right, it's probably good if I cry too, but I can't stop because he's crying. I believe that a spanking for the bigger wrong choices while they are little equals a relationship and a voice with them later. That's my testimony. Not all of our children are raised and adults, but I've been blessed. God has been good to us. It's my testimony that faithful, loving, corporal punishment. See, this is one of the struggles. I don't know if I have that on another point, but I've seen people who thought they could just direct children with their voice. I taught school long enough to have seen young ladies come to teach school who thought they would never spank. And I watched one of those particularly try to handle some pretty big students with her voice. And it wasn't Sister Tia, in case you're wondering. And there was frustrations, and those children were bad, and they learned it's just the voice, especially boys. They don't mind a lady's voice. Lady teachers think that a scolding will really make them wilt, because that's how ladies feel. You're all about feelings, and that really makes you feel bad. Some little boys, that don't faze. But when the worst of event happens, the bigger thing happens, and you take that child out and you give them a spanking, you put authority in the rest of your voice. And then when you say, sit up, put your feet on the floor, and pay attention in class, you don't have to spank for that. They'll listen to that voice because somewhere, and often the word gets around among students, did you know Johnny got spanked? Whatever. They figure that out. Okay? And so a loving parent will discipline his child, and that I don't believe you should spank for every little thing. But that bigger event, that real challenge, that one that you're clear on, that's an obvious disobedience, then take it and take it through. And in a loving way, it'll put authority in the rest of your voice. And it'll make a relationship with them later. Well, number three is children must be taught to hearken. They must be taught to listen. When you say, take the garbage out, they need to take the garbage out. Now, children also need to learn to be able to talk to you. And sometimes what we're asking them to do is complicated, or they have a question or something. It needs to be safe for them to ask legitimate questions or express legitimate thoughts in it if it's not rebellion. And we need to listen to that. But ultimately, they must hearken. If they operate from the thing of, I don't want to do what mom says or what dad says, they need some correction. Children need to learn to hearken. There are laws of God that we as parents cannot change. And we can't change them. And we can't fudge it for our children. I remember in school, middle grades, or maybe sixth, seventh, somewhere in there, I remember a boy had a problem, and he was challenging his teacher. So as a principal, I got involved in working with this boy, and he was pretty brilliant, and he had life figured out, and he had figured out what I should and should not do and all that. And as I talked to him about what was wrong with his, what was going on, I told him, I said, what do you think God will do to me if I don't correct you for this? One of us is going to get a whooping. If I let you go, God's going to whoop me. Who should get the whoop? And I remember the big eyes, like, it never occurred to him that I must answer to God for how I let this stuff develop. I don't want to punish you just because I'm the principal. I must answer to a higher authority. Those are some really special moments in children's lives when they start to grasp the fact that this is a much bigger picture than just being a parent. You get to tell your child what to do. We answer to God. Children must be taught to hearken. Proverbs 29:15, the rod and reproof give wisdom. It gives wisdom. It helps develop the prefrontal cortex. The rod and reproof. I like that. The smack and the words that explain why the smack. The rod and reproof give wisdom, but a child left to himself bringeth his mother to shame. Correct thy son, and he shall give thee something other than you see in most grocery stores when community families are shopping. Correct thy son, and he shall give thee rest, yea, he shall give delight unto thy soul. Biblical, loving, correctional discipline accomplishes that. Well, in teaching school, in the upper grades, numerous times I had the privilege of sitting at lunchtime listening to upper graders reminiscing younger grades classrooms, reminiscing about good teachers and poor teachers, reminiscing about years that they enjoyed school and years that they didn't. And you would think that 8th, 9th, and 10th graders would sit there and be gloating over the years that they had the most freedoms and most privileges and the most chaos in their classroom. And that's not true. They would reflect on the teachers who kept law and order, and they'd say, there we learned something, and I loved that year, and whatever. The years where there was looseness and accommodation, there was frustration, and they were often embarrassed about themselves and wished the teacher had delivered them from their foolishness that they now all know about each other, what we did back there in fifth grade or wherever it was. Number four, parenting must be focused on the child's well-being and future. As we parent our children, we must think about their future. It's not just about correcting children right now today because I don't want to be embarrassed that my children are bad. I feel sorry for you parents as we come to these church services because I remember the fear of sitting in church when someone's preaching a child training message and having a child that would be crying and I would be like trying to figure out what to do and everybody would be like, oh, he should listen to this message. But we don't parent just because we don't want to be embarrassed in public. We parent, and what we do must be focused on the eternal well-being. And when you do that, guess what? As you work on it, line upon line, it equals a blessing now when we go out in public. It does. But if you only focus on right now, then children learn that, hey, brace up and be good when people are watching, but you can be a terror elsewhere. And that's terribly frustrating. It's an inconsistency that makes children angry. I believe it's what Ephesians and Colossians talks about, provoking our children to wrath. Proverbs 22:6 says, train up a child in the way he should go, and when he's old, he will not depart from it. As I understand the Hebrew construction of that verse, it would be more correctly rendered in English, train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, the training will not depart from him. Because you read that verse and you say, well, that's not true. I know some people who departed from their training. But I know some people who departed from their training that still it bothers them in their mind at times. They can't get away from it. Now, I believe there's a hardness of heart that comes after a person pushes that away long enough. That maybe gets less and less. But it's true that as we train our children right, that will not easily depart from them. And they have to make a choice to push it away and go against it. So parenting must focus on the child's well-being and future. Number five, correction brings release from guilt and should deepen the parent-child relationship. Go with me to Hebrews chapter 12. Here's a picture, here's a teaching about God and what he does for his sons on this subject of chastening. Hebrews 12, verse 5. And ye have forgotten the exhortation which speaketh unto you as unto children. My son, despise not thou the chastening of the Lord, nor faint when thou art rebuked of him. That's negative. That's feeling ashamed. Don't faint. Don't run away from it. Don't despise it. For whom the Lord loveth, he chasteneth and scourgeth every son whom he receiveth. If ye endure chastening, God dealeth with you as with sons. For what son is he whom the Father chasteneth not? But if ye be without chastisement, whereof all are partakers, enter ye bastards and not sons. If you run away from the yoke, if you get out from underneath, if you will not allow the Father to chasten you, then you are an illegitimate son. And you are not a son in that relationship with the Father. Verse 11, now no chastening for the present seemeth to be joyous, but grievous. It's true. We don't say, sure, come give me a spanking. God, whoop up on me because I just love that. No, it does. Right now, it hurts. But nevertheless, afterward, it yieldeth the peaceable fruit of righteousness for those that will accept it. It says, for though unto them which are exercised thereby, for them who enter into it, for them who feel the pain and endeavor to understand it and say, Lord, teach me, exercise of receiving chastisement. There's a work that goes into that. And so correction, biblical correction brings release from guilt and should deepen the parent-child relation. Just like God's chastening bonds us to our Heavenly Father. And I talked about that example of taking a child and when we correct them, then the loving reassurance that we release them and we will not hold this against them. We won't keep bringing it up. Number six, as parents, we must keep our own spirits under control and our motives righteous. I believe that perhaps one of the reasons there is a thing called gentle parenting is because there was too much of the other kind of parenting that's frustrated, angry, and stirred. And somebody said there has to be a better way. And what I'm promoting to you tonight is biblical, loving, correctional discipline that does not have inconsistencies and anger and selfishness. Our own spirits are under control. We're not screaming at our children. We're not yelling. You don't need to raise your voice. You only need to tell them what they shall do and expect them to do it. And if they have questions, sometimes one of the things that happens to us sometimes is we say things in an adult way and maybe a child doesn't understand it. So we need to be careful that we were clear. I remember watching a father they hooked a chain from the pickup truck that was driving to a car that was not able to drive. They wanted to pull it into the shop on this property. And the father was going to steer the car that wouldn't drive. And the son was going to drive the pickup and pull it. And the father, I watched this from a distance and heard it and smiled because I knew what was going to happen when that chain gets tight. And the father tried to give his son direction. And the father said, go slow, go slow, just before he got in the car. So the son methodically went slow compared to how you would drive a pickup in a big open parking lot. He got on the throttle and he just went consistently slow. Bang. And the dad got out and said, I said go slow. He didn't teach the boy. He should have said, look, son, you need to ease into the chain. Okay? It's not just slow. It's like tighten it up. And once it's tight, then you can actually go faster than you do when you tighten it up. sometimes as parents, that's what we do, and we can't understand why Johnny didn't go slow. And Johnny thinks he did go slow, and there's a disconnect. And so we must keep our spirits under control. We must keep our motives righteous, and we must endeavor to think like a child and understand, have I made this clear? And how can I make it more clear? We must keep our spirits under control and our motives righteous. It's important that our own heart's needs are met in Jesus Christ before we raise children, as we raise children. Because if our own heart needs are not met, and we're frustrated and outside of the will of God, we're going to be frustrated with our children. And the last point of tonight's message, I believe that godly parents will worship God together as a family. As I think about parenting children, one of the things that we must focus on, one of the things that parents, you need to keep a priority, is those times where you worship God together. It might be a Bible story when the children are little, and then prayer before they go to bed. Keeping God central in our home. Family worship. Sometimes we come to ordination time. Someone is named in the lot, and we have examination, and we talk about how's your own personal Bible reading and prayer? How is family worship? And it's a concern to us as bishops. How could a man be a minister if he doesn't have time to have personal devotions and he doesn't have time to lead his family in worship? That's a concern. Because that's an integral part of keeping God, giving God his rightful place in our homes. And I know it's hard. I know you got around, tried to get around early tonight to come to Winter Bible School. And in our own family's experience, when we had church in the evening, we didn't have family worship after supper. But we would have prayer with the children before they went to bed. But every time where we could, it should be something where children expect it, not something like, I wonder why we're having family worship tonight. Godly parents will worship God together. Well, may God bless every parent here with wisdom to raise your children. And may God bless grandparents with wisdom to encourage the young fathers and mothers who are carrying the heat and burden. It is a formidable task. It is a heavy job. The load, and there can be weariness at times, but it's one of the greatest blessings of life to be faithful with family and see children grow up to love and serve God and then choose godly companions and then have families and then have godly grandchildren who love Bible stories. And may God bless us with faithfulness in our parenting and give us wisdom that as we raise our families, we would not get sidetracked by the winds of doctrine that would lead us astray. Shall we kneel for prayer?